Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and the Sunbury Motors Service Department open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Best in the business. All right. You may have heard that Hank Steinbrenner, the eldest son of George Steinbrenner, passed away today only at 63. It was not, repeat, not coronavirus related. So in tribute to the Steinbrenner family, our play-by-play call of the day.
To the second baseman, Cano. The Yankees are back on top. World champions for the 27th time.
Joe Buck with the call on Fox Sports. And that was the Yankees' last championship in 2009. George Steinbrenner passed away, 8 months after that? 7, 8 months after that he passed away? As they beat the Phillies in the 2009 World Series. By the way, yesterday was the anniversary yesterday of Harry Callis passing away. The Yankees, between Hank Steinbrenner, who passed away, Hal Steinbrenner, they've done a good job of turning over a lot of the baseball work to Randy Levine and to Ryan Cashman, and the Yankees, once baseball gets going, they are going to be the favorite to win it this year. All right. Jaywon Sider, Penn State's outstanding running backs coach and also one of the top recruiters in the country, met with the media earlier today. We heard part of it in the previous half hour. Here's the rest of it.
Next up, Nubias Wilborn, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Hey, Coach, good to meet you.
You too.
Question for you. You mentioned earlier about how working from home, you can do it. Is that something you would want to see maybe stay even after the world, quote-unquote, goes back to normal?
No. I like to be in the presence. You know, I like the kids around me. I like to be able to physically see them and sit in that room so if they ask questions, I can get them to draw them on the board. I just think as a human element, interaction with the people you coach and that means more than sitting behind a computer screen. My eyes hurt. I'm wearing glasses now because I've been sitting behind the computer so long. But it also shows you that even when you're on vacation and you're away from each other, you can still get on a screen and everybody can function and still better be day to day with kids, whether us on vacation, they're on vacation, they want to talk about something. So you see football a little different than what you have in the past, you know, and it's who knows where it's going to go next, but you know, at least we prepare for it now, you know, and not let this be excuse of why we behind when this pandemic ever ends.
Next up is Frank Bodani, York Daily Record.
Hey, good to talk to you, Coach. Thank you.
You too, Frank.
Go back to Journey Brown. You mentioned at the beginning a little bit about how he seems maybe he's just being able to find that track speed on the football field. I mean, he may be the fastest sprinter Penn State's ever gotten. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Have we? So you almost make it seem like maybe we're going to see a different Journey Brown in a sense. This next. Well,
I almost compare him, if you really – to me, this high comparable. Basically, it's all those three guys we talked about early, him, Devin, and Noah, are basically like sophomores to me now. It's what you want to see. This is basically a freshman year. And you take and you say, why you say that? Because, well, Journey hadn't played in 2 years, really. And now we're starting to see what certain kids redshirt and development over time can do for kids when you got the intangibles and you're willing to work and be patient. He's a prime example of that. I mean, now he's playing as a football player. When I first got here, I said he was a track kid playing football, and I meant that. But that was not being negative. I mean, he was a fast kid. He had measurables. He had talent. He just didn't know how to tap into it. And over time, he bought into it. It's amazing. You go back to Illinois, he got that first touchdown on a sweep. His whole demeanor and confidence started changing on that one play. And we gradually bring him along throughout the season. And then I thought this spring, he had a great spring. I mean, it was not surprising that he was a starter for us down the road because I thought he could win the job. And at camp, you know, he went neck and neck with Ricky. It was one day that made a difference between me picking him to start and not the starter. But the kid kept working, and he kept trying to figure it out. And then it all just, you know, that light bulb went off. And then now, I mean, he's playing. He's doing stuff that it's amazing to see. I thought the last five games, I would have said he was playing as good as Miles played the year before. And it's not knock on Miles, but the way he was making safeties miss and erasing the defense, I mean, like, that's impressive. You don't wake up with that gift every day. And I think he's tapping into it. I don't think he's satisfied. I think he's hungry because now he got a taste of it and he realized how good he can be going forward.
Time for a couple more. Next up is John Salver with the Center Daily Times.
Hey, J1. Hope you're doing well. With the blue-white game being, you know, originally scheduled for this coming weekend, does it start to set in more that things are, of course, not where they're supposed to be at right now?
I think it's hard for me to speak for everybody, but it's set into me a long time ago. You know, when this thing is real. I mean, you got people dying. It's unexplainable. You know, my heart goes out to the first responders and the volunteers that's, you know, trying to keep this country safe. So to me, it's real. I mean, and I hope it's real for everybody else that, you know, you don't want to wait to that moment to affect somebody next to you. Then you realize, you know, I should take this thing serious. So, you know, we still preparing, you know, no different whether we was playing today or tomorrow. So our approach hasn't changed to going forward. So, you know, if we miss one practice in spring, you know, I look at it this way, you know, we kept our kids healthy going into the fall. You know, you got to channel that your thought process a little bit different, and we all do. You're on mute, Greg.
Thank you. Last question is Jerry DePaula, Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
Thanks for your time today, Coach. My question to you is, from a physicality standpoint, how much time will your guys need to be ready for the first day of training camp, whenever that is, and how much time are they going to need after that for the first game of the season, whenever that is?
Man, Jerry, that's a tough question, Jerry. It really is. I don't know that answer. I would think this. You know, you go back to being a high school coach. These kids are naturally different now. You know, they've been training their whole life. Most of these kids are still able to work out, you know, on their own at home. Some places still got gym. You know, I would think, you know, a month or 2 months, we can get these kids up to speed. You know, you just got to have a balance between football and training to make sure they're in shape. Because what you don't want to do is rush these kids and they pull muscles and then you got longevity injuries that's going to flare up throughout the season. So, you know, I think we all got to be on the same page, you know, from weight training to the medical staff to nutrition. I mean, it's going to be a process that we all going to have to dig in and find out what's right. And it's going to be beyond my opinion on what that takes. You know, it's going to take all of us.
All right. Thank you very much, Coach. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today.
That's Greg Kincaid at the end. Who's done, by the way, a great job. He increased Chris Peterson. Terry Smith's going to be on later in the week. But they've done a great job of getting people out there, one coach after another, which has been tremendous. And give Penn State a lot of credit for doing this. They understand and get it. People want to hear these people. And we had Andrew Kahn of MLive.com on the show Friday, Matt? that sound right? Do we have Khan on Thursday or Friday?
I believe so, yeah.
And I asked him about the Michigan football stuff. And he said, not a word. Not a word. Michigan has literally done nothing with the football media. Really? This is why I talked about for years, for the last couple of years, there are certain points you do need to talk about and be realistic about what you're seeing. And I said that maybe, I think I made this statement right around the bowl, right after the bowl game where they played Alabama, and they played very well against Alabama. They just didn't win. And I said at the time, I said, look, let's be realistic about the state of Michigan football over the last 15 years. State of Michigan football over the last 15 years is, I think, should be apparent to everybody. Yes, are they the winningest program of all time? No doubt. Okay? No doubt. But when you've had a program that's been around as long as they have and has played as many games as they have, you're going to get that. I believe I made the point about Michigan football about the number of 11-win seasons. Not 10-win seasons, but 11-win seasons. I figure now we'll go in that direction, especially with the fact that, you know, that you're essentially now playing 13 games a season. And it's gone up steadily over time. And when you look at Michigan football, I think they've had, what, 8 11-win seasons over the years? Eight? Let's see. And let's see, three of them were 1901, 1902, and 1903. Now, obviously, you're not playing as many games, but then once you get to the 70s, Bo in 86 made it four, the year Penn State won it. Lloyd Carr, 97, 112. That's six. These might just be their conference championship seasons. But I think they have eight total. And that's it. And then you look in recent years and what they've done. I want to say Brady Hoke had one. Michigan in the last 15 years, I want to be very fair about this, has been a really good program that on any given Saturday is a very dangerous team to play. But they're not an elite. They're not an elite program. They're really good. They're really good, but not elite. Yeah, 01, 02, 03, they won 11, so that's three, right? And then the next 11-win season, which isn't going to be a while because you're not playing 11 games in a year. Bo made it four in 71. Five in 86. Carr, when they won shared the title, made it six in 97. 06. And then Brady Hoke had one. They've got eight. Okay? The whole history of Michigan football, they have eight. They began in 1879. And there's no doubt, you know, I mean, you look at the early years. One, two, three, four. Maybe they have nine. Four. Because I missed one in here with Fielding Yost and
1905. My apologies. They went 12-1. Look, geez, they played a lot of games back then. For 1905. Let's see. Four, there's five. Let's see, there's six. Seven. Ding, 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 ding. No, I was right. Eight. Eight total. Entire history of Michigan football, eight. That's all history from 1879 to now. They have eight. Penn State, of course, has had three in the last 4 years. And when you look at, I'll give you this one here. So Penn State has three in the last 4 years. They have eight total ever. Ironically, I was just talking with Tom Bradley this morning. Okay? So let's just take Joe. Joe had one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13. So Penn State's had 16 11-win seasons. Joe had 13 of them. Michigan's had eight. Eight. In 140 years. Okay. Penn State's had 16 in 52 seasons. Joe had 13. James so far has three. That's 11-win seasons. Okay? Again, and for Michigan, they had one under Brady Hoke. And then before that, Lloyd Carr, certainly, there's no getting around Lloyd Carr, great success. But they need to get themselves out there. I mean, if I'm sitting there and I'm talking to, it's not my job to advise him. Not in any way, shape, or form. Okay? It's not my job to advise him in any way, shape, or form. But if I'm sitting there and I have a program and I haven't even gone through Ohio State's numbers. Okay? Since 2004, they've had two 11-win seasons. Penn State, in the same span, by the way, has had six. Joe had three. James has had three. They've had two. And none by the current coach. Lloyd Carr went 11-2 in 2006. Brady Hoke went 11-2 in 2011. That's it. Okay? I need to get my team out there. I need to get my word out there. And they've had, and Michigan has literally done no publicity, press conference, anything like that. Penn State gets it. And they're getting a lot of praise, by the way, for this virtual blue-white day that's coming up on Saturday. Now, obviously, the show, which will include James Franklin, is going to be 1:30 to 2:30 on Saturday. And they're going to look back at the 2016 Penn State-Ohio State game. And I'm being interviewed for that tomorrow morning at 8:30 about that. That's going to be a part of it. But they're getting themselves out there. And you need to get yourself out there more than ever now. Jack and I talked about this before I came on the show. We were talking about, look, coronavirus, comfortable, trying to get back to a place, no vaccine yet, but also economic reality. There are people at the moment that 5-6 weeks ago had some disposable income, might not have it now. You got to get your name out there. You just can't assume that, hey, we're back and they're going to be here. You don't have to work for every fan. Be because the fans are great. It's also not the easiest time. Penn State understands that. They're talking to their fans all the time, every day. They're talking to the media almost every day right now. They're doing is tremendous. Michigan? Oh, no. I think they act like they just assume they'll show up. Really? All right, back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors Service Department open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Don't forget Saturday, Penn State's doing its virtual Blue White Day. That will include the one-hour show on the Penn State Sports Network. James Franklin will join me on that show. James will probably be on, let's say, about 2 o'clock on Saturday. All right. Very pleased to be joined by somebody who knows his way to State College back in the 80s, as a matter of fact, and that would be John Clayton. John, it's a pleasure to hear from you again. Thanks for your time.
Good to be back. It's like we got to get back to the restaurants over there, because I still love that drive going up from the Pittsburgh Press, driving up there and getting to State College on the Fridays and Top Trees and all that great stuff. Miss that.
Yeah, and we miss you too. All right, just so you know, we miss you. But along the way, all the awesome work you've done. So let's get to a couple things with this year. What has it been like for you in this year to cover what is going on because of the circumstances?
Well, there's no doubt it's strange. I mean, because, particularly being in the first wave, I mean, this was the epicenter starting in the Seattle area where I live now. And the place that started, which, of course, was over at the Care Life Center, which was 8 miles away from where I live. And so that was scary. Fortunately, there's so many smart people here in the state that were able to work with the governor and really come up with a very good plan. Like, for example, one of the four models that you see nationwide as far as predicting the numbers and all that is at the University of Washington. And, yes, the governor was out there with all that information before anybody else, saying how every 3 days things were going to triple or double as far as the number of deaths and the number of positive tests. And that's exactly what happened. And then everybody started to catch up. And so this was one of the first areas that shut things down. You know, it was the schools. They shut down, just about everything. And so because of that, this area is on the verge of being out down the arc. And so because of that, they may start to think about opening some things up by the beginning of next month. I mean, right now it's pretty well locked down to April 30th. But this is the area that you need to kind of study to see where it's all going and how much should be allowed.
And by the way, for the uninitiated, it's the IHME model that John's talking about, the University of Washington. John, the draft features usually some intriguing trades, trading up, trading down. Because of the virtual nature of this, will that be more difficult this time? Won't be impossible, but will it be more difficult?
Yeah, very much so, particularly in the third day of the draft. I mean, I use the last 3 years as the model as far as the draft day trades, because now you're allowed to trade compensatory picks, and that started in 2017. So in those 3 years, there were 37 draft day trades. Now, this year, and of course, what you look at is in the third day of the draft, where I think it's going to be very difficult to get as many trades in, there's an average of 23. But think about the difficulty, because, I know from the many stations I'm on, and even a station I'm on here in Seattle, that, a lot of the remotes who's working from home, their Comrexes, which is the boxes tied into the Wi-Fi, break down at times. And so all of a sudden, guys go on and off the air. Well, that's going to happen, I think, at homes, particularly where the general managers are, and it could be happening at the commissioner's place. Because let's say, we're going to be in April, there's going to be thunderstorms, lightning storms, and all that. The internet could go out, so there's going to be problems there. And then in the third day of the draft, you have 5 minutes from round 3 to 6, and only 4 minutes in round 7. So it's like you have barely enough time to get your own pick in, let alone get the details of the trade worked out. So I think that number is going to come down dramatically. But in the first 2 days, I think it can be like normal. But I think in the last day, it's going to be almost just sit there and make your picks.
Of course, being in the Seattle area, You've had a chance, obviously, to take a look at what the Seahawks are doing. You're talking about an experienced GM there that has been around the block and has done a lot of great things. What is that going to mean, especially in a situation like this, with a guy like John Snyder with the experience he has? Because the Seahawks are not the team that drafts 1 through 10 every year.
No, and that's the reality of, I guess, you become a victim of your own success.
Yeah,
and this team's been to the playoffs in 8 out of 10 years, and because of that, you're drafting between 21 and 32. But of late, it's hard to get a Pro Bowl player at that spot, because what happens is that everybody has first-round grades up to about 16 players, and then you're getting second-round grades, and so all of a sudden, the guys don't make the Pro Bowl, and the next thing you know, you're not giving the fifth-year option, you're letting the guy go. In the last 5 drafts, there's only been 5 players that have been to the Pro Bowl taken between 21 and 32, and more than half of the guys taken in those picks end up being cast aside, either in trades after 3 years or being cut in the fourth year of 4-year contracts. And so what John Snyder has done, and he's done it really since about 2013, is he trades down, figuring, okay, I want to try to get 10 or 11 picks, trade out of the first round, try to get extra second-round picks, third-round picks, fourth-round picks, and to do that, it requires, obviously, the ability to move down and know what you want to do, which he's very good at, and then making sure you get enough contacts on the other team to work out those deals. But that's what the model is that he's been successful at. And so far, I mean, even though he's only had about 6 first-round picks since 2010, a lot of those guys aren't back after the second contract or to get to the second contract, but it sure works as far as building your roster.
I remember when Russell Wilson was picked, Jack Ham called me up, and Jack does the games with me here at Penn State. Jack called me up, and we'd just seen him play against Penn State in the fall. We said, what a steal in round 3. It also meant, along the way, John, that early on he was getting third-round money. And the Seahawks won a Super Bowl during that period of time. Why have they been able to stay on top, even though they then had to pay him, which then changed the salary structure of the team?
Well, what happens, and you see the cycle, it's usually about a 5-year cycle to be able to keep a playoff team together, and then you have to kind of rebuild it. And so what ends up happening is they go to the playoffs in 2012, get to Atlanta and lose in the second round of the playoffs. 2013, because they had the low contract number on Russell Wilson, they were able to get 2 pass rushers, Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, and they were able to add to the roster. And then they go back the second year in 2014, should have won the game, but they didn't hand off to Marshawn Lynch, and so they should have had 2 Super Bowls there. Then what ends up happening when you lose a game like this, and go ask Atlanta blowing the 25 points to the New England Patriots, go ask what you can probably see from last year's Super Bowl. If you lose a dramatic game like that, San Francisco is going to be affected from that dramatic loss. It creates problems in the locker room. So what ends up happening is that Richard Sherman and some of the defensive guys weren't high on Russell Wilson, and all of a sudden the things started to downturn a little bit, and then, of course, trying to keep as many players as you can to be able to do it. So what they did, they purged things a couple years ago. Now they're in the third year of the rebuild, and last year, were it not for the 3 injuries to running backs, their top 3 running backs, in the final month of the season, they were going to end up being, believe it or not, the number 1 seed, even though they weren't the best team. Right now, if they can get the defensive end situation taken care of, which is Devaney and Clowney, they should be in pretty good shape to at least challenge to get back to the Super Bowl this year.
John, what is the situation with Jadeveon Clowney? He's the number 1 guy out there, so what is his situation?
Well, I mean, first off, he made the mistake, and again, this is a really good player, and to show you how dedicated he was to the team, he needed core surgery, which is, of course, a sports hernia surgery, back in November. He postponed it. He played, the rest of the season for his teammates, maybe a little bit for himself, but he stayed on the field and played, even though it was great pain for him. Now, what happens is he wanted $23 to $24 million a year, and he missed the mark. And he was too slow in readjusting because, the one thing with Clowney, he's not a double-digit sack guy. And the sack guys get the bigger money. And so he was more in that 17-18 range, but he didn't do that move until he got 2 weeks into free agency. and it was too late. And so now he can't go out and get a physical because, again, he's had an injury history with missed 20 games. He had a micro fracture in his first year at Houston, and then, you know, he's had the core surgery. And so somebody has to check him out. But right now he's just standing there with nothing there except an offer from the Seahawks from somewhere between $13 million and $15 million, and he's going to be not – too positive accepting that because there'll be a pay cut from last year. And so nothing's happening. It's just slow and trying to see when he's going to make a decision or what he's going to do.
The Seattle Dragons were a part of the XFL, which after five games shut down, in part, let's be honest about it. I mean, the WWE, when they had to slow down, that was a money pipeline that kept the XFL going. What did you think of the XFL as a minor league?
I liked it a lot. I mean, what I liked is that Oliver Luck, from West Virginia, did it the right way. Because first off, he had the resources of Vince McMahon to at least try to buy 3 years to get this thing started. He worked out deals with the television networks, ABC, ESPN, and also Fox, that they could put the games on at a high level with the best crews and real good crews. And so you're able to watch the games and see things that you never get to see in an NFL game. I mean, you get to hear the coach calling the plays. You get to talk to the players as the plays come off the field after each play. And the broadcast quality was great. And I think the ratings were great, too. It was picking up, like in most cities. Like Seattle and St. Louis were the two success stories because, first game in Seattle, they drew 29,000. St. Louis, they were drawing close to 30,000. And then Houston got hot because of their success of being the best team. And so those were the three success cities. And you can see things were going good. But then, unfortunately, because of the virus, you have to break it down at midseason. Now nobody's assembling for any kind of sports activity. And so, everything gets shut down. And now, unfortunately, it's shut down for good. But I liked it. I liked some of the rule changes. I liked the energy. I liked the fan reaction. I mean, it was going to be a success, but now it's not.
Right. I agree with you. I thought it was going to have some long-term staying power to it. I really felt that way. I'm with you completely. And some of the rule changes. And speaking of rules, Sky Judge, no. I know the Eagles have been pushing the overtime to go from 10 to 15 minutes. What are your thoughts on those two right there?
Well, I think the competition committee is making a mistake by not going for the Sky Judge. Because,
I agree.
Not only is it, unfortunately, they're not going to bring back the pass interference rule. That's smart, because that was a mistake from the very beginning. But I think the 15-minute overtime is the right way to do it, because you want to prevent ties. And, if you have a 10-minute overtime with the ability just to kick a field goal, the other team gets a chance to carry the ball, that kills about 7 or 8 minutes, and you're really left unless you've got a quarterback that can get you about a 1 minute, 90 second drive for a quick field goal. And again, it comes down to a field goal, then you have a tie, and that's bad. But again, the Sky Judge, I think, is the right thing to do, because we're in an age right now with a new referees contract, officials contract, 5-year deal, that more than two dozen officials are going to retire between now and July. And of course, that's going to affect the next couple seasons. And so because of that, because they can put in for their retirement for the 2021 season. And so that's going to really push the league into younger officials at a time. And you know it from, college and high school, it's harder now to find officials because less people are going into the officiating game. And so that's going to be a problem. That's why Sky Judge, I think, is the right thing to do. Plus, you're going to have 24 officials that are going to be available who've been in the league that can work as the Sky Judge.
Just so people know, in California in high school, they're playing games on Wednesdays and Fridays, because that way they can use the officials on Wednesday to then officiate on Friday. That's why, that's how thin some of the officiating's
in Texas
getting
too.
At lower levels.
In Texas they have
too.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's not enough officials to go around. And so because of that, just to maintain officiating games, you're right, they have to all schedule almost like 3-4 days of football just to have everybody out there to be able to officiate these games.
Ooh, that's sad. I have to ask you about the two additional playoff teams, which will be for this upcoming season, and then eventually a 17th game. When that CBA was ratified with both of those in there, what were your thoughts?
I'm not as much on the 17 games because I worry. I track all the injury stuff, and so I'm a on the player side on that, particularly if you're going to be a guy after 5 years, I mean, you're going to have more of a tendency to get an injury, and that's not good if you play that 17th game, and that's why you saw most of the veterans who are on their second contract or third contract resisting it. I like the idea of the extra playoff game because, you know, it may cheapen it in the AFC, but it's good for the NFC. And where I say it cheapens it, I mean, they're pretty much in the AFC for the last couple of years. It's hard for me to find six legitimate playoff teams. And now, even this year coming up, I mean, if Jared Stidham is going to be the quarterback with the Patriots, you've got three quarterbacks being drafted in the top six, and you may have as many as 11 quarterbacks on their rookie contracts, and you still don't know if they're good, bad, or indifferent. Where in the NFC, I think it's good is that in a quarterback-driven league, you've got 12 quarterbacks that are making $21 million a year or more. Mm-hmm. Most of them have been to the Pro Bowl, and most of them have pretty good starting experience. And so now you have more than 10 teams that are playoff worthy going for seven spots, where you may have five going for seven spots in the AFC. So it cheapens it in the AFC. It strengthens it, I think, in the NFC. And in the end, I mean, I think it goes in different balances because you're going to have cycles. Because you go to the early 2000s, that was an AFC-dominated sport. Yeah. Right now it's an NFC-dominated sport.
Yeah. In fact, the Steelers would have made it last year as the extra AFC team, and Duck Hodges would have been the starting quarterback, to amplify your point. One final question, John, if I hope you don't mind before I let you go, and that deals with the NFL doing business as usual. When it started with business as usual in free agency when this crisis began, and as you mentioned, Washington State was in the epicenter of this, what did you think, but now what do you think a month later about how they've conducted business as usual?
Yeah, initially I thought that they should delay the start of free agency, and now in retrospect I realize I was completely wrong. And the idea was, I mean, not just the problems we have with the virus, but also the fact that they just got the CBA done. And so literally in about a 48-hour period, you had to make all the major adjustments in what you do as a team to be able to get under the cap, to be able to make the contract stuff. And now that I look back, and I was completely wrong, because what has ended up happening, there's now been, of the 394 free agents, 260 of them have homes, either with their own team, 95 of them, or the 165 that have moved on to different teams. Now, some of the things are going to fall apart because most of those guys don't have physicals, and they're going to fail their physicals, and the deals are going to fall apart. We've seen that happen four times. But it was the right thing to do because at least you may not know when your team can get together, but at least you know you have a team. And it's the same thing for the draft. Because sure, they're going to have all kind of problems, with the draft selections and all that stuff. But at least you have a team. Now it's just a matter of when you can get it on the field.
John, an absolute pleasure. I always have really, really appreciated your work, admired it, and we miss seeing you here in State College.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much.
John Clayton, one of the true legends, without question. We will come back tomorrow, by the way. We're going to have on Sal Palantonio and Charlie Casserly on the show tomorrow. Really looking forward to that. This guy in the Valley texted me all these Redskins questions. What do I do with that, man? Ooh, I think I better ask him. And there's this guy in Danville that texted me questions. I deleted those. Is that all right?
Sure.
We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. That was a lot of fun, huh? John Clayton.
Love the professor.
He is, he's just one of those real pros that's just always been just really connected and just really good at what he does. He's just really good. I think that's what, you know, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody that, you know, that we try to get, and we're going to have two of them tomorrow, Sal Palantonio. And we're going to, and Sal's going to be, he's going to be with the Eagles next week, right?
Yeah, he'll be with the Eagles, Giants, Ravens, and Jets for ESPN NFL Network's dual
Giants, Ravens, Giants, Ravens, Eagles, and the team that shares the stadium with the Giants. Okay.
yes.
Elio sitting there. It's like, Elio, he's like, oh, he's just, Elio's getting madder and madder by the, by the minute when it comes to every time we reference the Jets. You know? You and I are big Jets fans, right?
Yeah.
And right there in a nutshell tells it all.
You like the other New York team, and I'm just the Philly guy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting that you know, I grew up a Giants fan and the whole thing, right? I mean, I made no secret about that. Same thing growing up as a Red Sox fan and so forth. But, you know, it's amazing over time with everything I've done. I've been so involved, obviously, with my job, Penn State, and everything like that. You almost feel like you follow, like I follow the Giants, but if they win, okay. If they don't win, okay. It's, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm disappointed they lost. It's a little different now for me. Now, obviously, you don't feel that way. I mean, you're still massively consumed with hate for the Cowboys.